sick and tired of hearing things from uptight, short-sighted, narrow-minded hypocrites. All I want is the truth. Just give me some truth.
Hello, listeners, and welcome to this edition of 9/11 Wake Up Call. I'm Cheryl.
On today's show, you'll hear the second and final part of a speech given by Willie Rodriguez, who was a janitor working at the World Trade Center on 9/11. And then you'll hear the second part of a speech given by actor Daniel Sunjata about what happens when you speak out about 9/11. And that'll be followed by details on some 9/11 anniversary events. But first, for Willie Rodriguez, the janitor at the World Trade Center, he was in one of the six basement levels of the World Trade Center towers when bombs went off in the basement levels. And this was before the planes hit the building. His personal account of what happened totally shatters the government's version of what happened on 9/11. Willie Rodriguez was interviewed in private by the 9/11 Commission, but his statements were completely omitted from the 9/11 Commission report. We pick up his story here as he's climbing the stairwell trying to save others. So here he is, Willie Rodriguez.
And we didn't know what was going on. So I continue going up and get to the 33rd floor. I find a lady trembling on the floor on a fetal position. She had no shoes. I said, "What are you doing there?" And she said, "I don't know where to go." I stood her up, put her on the stairwell. There were a couple of people coming down. I remember people from the cafeteria of the 44th floor. And I say, "Take her out." And at that moment, on the corridor, I hear something very strange. On the 34th floor, I hear stuff being moved around. And heavy stuff. You know, like those metal dumpsters scratching the floor? Really heavy stuff. Now, why was it strange? Because the 34th floor was a floor that was got out by the construction crew of the World Trade Center, and it was closed. In other words, elevators did not stop there. There was no walls. There's nothing there. And for those people that maybe they are not in construction, that's what a building does. When a tenant moves out, they gut it out, and they make the money redesigning the place to the specification of the new tenant. So to hear this is the first time that I felt fear on that day. So, of course, I knew somebody was there. So I bypassed that floor and continued to the upper floors. People screaming, people to this day, I guess the biggest pain and nightmare that I will have is just to hear the screams of people still stuck in the elevator claiming for help. So I make it to the 39th floor. On the 39th floor, from the opposite side of the stairwell, comes David Lim with two fire chiefs because they have the white shirts, and we all gathered together to talk about what we were going to do next. And at that moment, bah, we hear the impact of the other tower. And inside of the building, we hear boom, 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 boom. And on the radio, we hear, "We lost 65, we lost 65. Meaning the 65th floor collapsed floor by floor by floor up to the 44th floor. We're on the 39th floor, five flights away. And I go into a frenzy, "We got to go up, we got to go up, we got to go up." And David Lim said, "Willie, no. You've done enough, but this is not your job." My mother again. And I say, "What? No, I'm going up." He said, "You're still a civilian. You're my responsibility. Better if you give me a hand with a person on the wheelchair on the 27th floor and get out." He said, "You know, I'm going up." I said, "Please, Willie, just do me that favor." I said, "You know, I'm going to do it, but I'm coming right back." I ran down to the 27th floor. I screamed to the fireman. I said, "I have orders to get this guy down right now." The guy was already taken out from the wheelchair, put on a rescue basket, an orange basket, and tied up. And three firemen stood up, said, "Let's go." So we started bringing him down the stairwell. As we go down, we continue listening to small explosions in the building. And all of a sudden, chunks of the ceiling, of the wall, are coming all over us. But it was sheetrock. And one of the things that I never forget, it was the building was shifting constantly. So the fluorescent light, the holders changed position, and you could hear the lights breaking in line all the way down. Pa, 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 pa. So we're like, oh my God, what is this? All of a sudden we hear a huge thump. South Tower collapse. While we're going down the stairwell, we lost our balance. We fell. I remember the guy on the rescue basket, because he had one of those masks, looked at us, and I said, don't worry. After this, we're going to go get a beer. And he looks at me and go like this. And I don't drink. I don't drink. We make it to the lobby. When we get to the lobby, that beautiful marble. How many people have ever been to the World Trade Center? Remember that marble that was on the lobby? Everything was pulled from the wall. And the only thing you saw was the cement patches where the marble was before. So I said, oh God, what is this? A Dantesque scene. I looked to the left, everything was collapsed. The doors of the freight elevators and the passenger elevators on the lobby were open this way, meaning something happened from the bottom and kicked the doors open from the bottom up like this. I said again, God, what's going on? One of the firemen, his name was Regenhard, looks at me and said, set up the ambulance. So I turned to the right and goes to the West Side Avenue entrance, which was the main entrance to the building. As I go closer, every glass from the area was totally destroyed. There was glass shatter everywhere. Look to the left, the fire safety director area was totally collapsed. And I'm in shock again. I get to the front where the cubicle, not the cubicle, the revolving door was. There was no revolving door, just the empty space. I get to the front, right on top of me. And you could hear the whole thing coming down. Boom, boom, boom. And the truck practically getting squashed. I was centimeters from the muffler. I could see the heat, the vapor and everything. And all I remember I said at that moment was, God, please don't give my mother the pain to see my body in pieces. Just let her find my body and recognize it. Because what I saw, all the bodies that I saw, and that's the only thing I asked for. And I knew I was going to die. And I expected death. And as I was there, all of a sudden, this dust came from every orifice under the truck and burned my face, burned my leg, on my thigh. I still have the scar. My knee was open. I don't know how. Totally open. And now I know I'm not dying squash, but I'm going to die of asphyxia because I cannot breathe. And I put my face under I put my shirt right under, and I said, I'm going to die. I'm just going to wait death as much as I can. I was a magician for 30 years, and I used to do the escape tricks that every magician does, the escape, the straight jacket escape and everything. So, you know, we always thought that you have to relax, you have to contain your breathing, and that's what I was trying to do. Luckily, CNN and Globovision from Brazil were filming from the World Financial Center side, and they said the last person came out right there. And they pointed the area where the rescue effort started, and that's how I was saved that day. Now, they put me out in the middle. That dust did not disperse for hours. That cloud, and I remember when they pulled me from under, the only thing I could see was the fluorescent lights on the jackets of the firemen. And a flashlight, and a guy screaming, this way, this way. And then I saw the word ambulance backwards. And I went in, stayed there for oxygen for like 15 minutes, came out, this is at the perimeter of Ground Zero. Get out, and the first thing I do is run back to where the truck was to make sure there was nobody else. When I get there, I was taken out on the nick of time because the tires blew up and the truck completely collapsed. So it was a mission. And I remember looking through the rubble. Remember that bridge that connected the World Financial Center with the World Trade Center? That collapsed on top of several fire trucks. I went under. I found two boots. I put the boots and I stayed with one leg inside. And that's when I said, I cannot continue doing this. But I stayed in the area until CNN called me, come over here. And I went over there and I thought, well, my mother probably thinks that I died. Somebody will be able to see me and let her know. So I went over there and I told CNN, totally in shock. You know, I lost all my friends. The Port Authority police officer that was with me, David Lim, died. Everybody died. The person on the wheelchair. The whole story, how I heard an explosion, There was explosions in the building. That went live on national TV all over the world. So what I'm telling you right now is nothing new. It's been out there. And after that, I became, of course, because of the media attention, I said, what I do with this? So I said, let's use it to organize the families. And that's why I started fighting for benefits and so on. Now, the good part was that, you see, these people, Felipe David, came out of coma 13 weeks after. Remember, I did not know these people personally. He sees me on NBC talking about the problems with the Red Cross, not giving money to the victims and so on. And he sees me and calls the doctor. He said, that's the guy that saved me. So NBC does a reunion on television, and it was very emotional. Felipe David, his testimony was never heard by the commission, and he was there. Salvatore Giambanco, that's TBN, the Christian Network, doing the encounter on Ground Zero. Sees me on TV, the same thing. That's the guy that saved me. Testimony never heard by the commission either. David Lynn survived under the rubble. He was made sergeant after that. He lost his dog. And this is the encounter for Telemundo in New York. So my story started to be validated constantly within months by all these people that were there. And the reason we do this is that we need the truth. We need to find out. When you have Richard Clark coming on national TV and saying, we fail you, we lied to you, our president failed you, our government failed you, and you have Condoleezza Rice refusing to testify for the commission, it made it more important to find out the truth. And that's why we do this. We owe this to the victims. I lost 200 friends. 200 friends I'm never going to see again. You know, the emotional inventory that you have to go daily. It's like your whole family is wiped out. So I have to be the voice for those people that don't have the opportunity to talk for themselves, to claim for justice. And that's why I'm going all over the world. Because if here, they don't want to listen, they're listening out there. And they're doing the right thing out there. All we ask is that continue asking questions. The families, the victims and the survivors believe, and rightly so, because we have been through the whole process of the investigation, that we have been lied to. That they have used our tragedy for a political agenda that we do not agree with. That we have been used to lose our little civil rights that we have left. That movement from the 60s that fought so hard to give us rights is gone. The Patriot Act, one single act, this administration has taken all those rights like that. Congress, Senate, legislature, they're all into it. So we have to fight back. We have to get our rights back, because every time that something happens, when you are more passive and tranquil, you will hear on the news, red alert, orange alert. They got to keep you constantly insecure. They have to control you. They have to control you. They put people on different television programs. Oh, it's okay that they check my bags and check my phone, and if I have nothing to hide and I'm going to feel more secure, I have to give my right to do that to feel more secure. It's okay. What? That doesn't make any sense.
And again, you were just listening to the second and final part of a speech given by Willie Rodriguez, a janitor who worked at the World Trade Center on 9/11. This speech is called What Really Happened on 9/11 and was given in 2006 at a Health and Freedom Conference put on by the Freedom Law School. And now we're going to hear from actor and activist Daniel Sunjata. This is the second and final part of a 2009 interview he did with Marina Portnaya on her program on RT. And RT stands for Russia Today, which, by the way, has recently been taken off the New York City cable stations with no explanation, in another act of media censorship. But now back to the interview. Here he is, actor Daniel Sunjata.
RT's exclusive interview with actor Daniel Sunjata continues as we talk about his unyielding demand for a new 9/11 investigation. You have repeatedly said that anybody who questions the government's version of September 11th is automatically considered a traitor, unpatriotic.
Crazy.
Yet you're still speaking out about this, and you have been speaking out about this issue and about the search for more answers. Mm-hmm. You're in the public eye. You're an actor. Are you concerned at all about the backlash that you may deal with?
Not really. I'd like to speak to that point that you just made, because mainstream media has pretty much been uniform in its response to celebrities in particular who have taken it upon themselves to speak out about this particular subject. You've got Willie Nelson, Marion Cotillard, Charlie Sheen, Rosie O'Donnell, Ed Asner, and the list goes on, Ed Begley Jr., famous people from the entertainment community who have spoken out about their questions regarding 9/11. Usually the mainstream media's response is to either completely ignore them or to literally call them crazy, call them insane, try to associate, make loose associations between 9/11 Truth, which is a notoriously peaceful movement, although it is a movement of dissent, but a notoriously peaceful movement, to try to make loose connections between 9/11 Truth and terrorism, which Geraldo Rivera did when the Times Square bombing took place. You know, he said, I think it was probably one of those 9/11 was an inside job kind of guys protesting, kind of like the eco-terrorists, where they don't intend to inflict casualties. To make that kind of a loose association between 9/11 Truth and, you know, terrorism was incredibly irresponsible from a journalistic standpoint, and to do so without ever having really entertained the arguments being put forth by 9/11 truthers was intellectually disingenuous, to say the very least. You know, I think it says a lot, and I will use Charlie Sheen as the most recent and probably best example. Charlie Sheen penned a letter to President Obama called 20 Minutes with the President, where he essentially asks for 20 minutes with President Obama to ask him questions on behalf of the victims' family members regarding 9/11, unanswered questions. And he cites, he has 20 bullet points in this letter to President Obama, and each one of these bullet points is supported in a bibliography that contains relatively uncontroversial news sources. And these are not like, the questions that he's asking are not crazy questions. It's not like holographic planes or beams from outer space having brought down the buildings. I mean, these are like really kind of nuts and bolts, inconsistencies and contradictions that he wanted the president to address. Now, Geraldo Rivera came out and called him crazy. There's somebody on Fox and Friends whose name I can't remember, Gutfeld or something like that, who called him a Nazi. You know, all kinds of ad hominem responses to a fact-based argument. And that, I think, is very telling. I think it means that somebody does not want to address the subject of 9/11 based upon the facts at hand. They want to respond with character assassination and personal insults, you know, on The View, which is not really the news. Meghan McCain responded to Charlie Sheen's 20 Minutes with the President initiative by saying, "Are you really going to take your political cues from an actor?" Clearly not remembering that Ronald Reagan was President of the United States and Arnold Schwarzenegger is Governor of the state of California. So that's not really a very substantive rebuttal to the questions that Charlie has raised either. As a matter of fact, he has yet to be substantively addressed, you know, based upon what he has put forward, and I'm kind of not surprised.
In the last investigation, Bush and Cheney agreed to testify mm-hmm. only behind closed doors, mm-hmm. not under oath, and with no audio taping, no videotaping, nothing. Mm-hmm. Would you like to see them questioned again under oath?
Absolutely. Absolutely, I would. I mean, we've addressed a lot of kind of crimes of omission, things that by virtue of the fact that they didn't happen seem to say a lot, and I think that that's a great example of that. I mean, doesn't that smack of guilt or of evasion? I mean, look, just the fact that it took 441 days for them to launch what later became the 9/11 Commission, when under similar circumstances, after Pearl Harbor, after the Kennedy assassination, after other traumatic events that happened on American soil, commissions were kicked off almost immediately. Investigations were started almost immediately. 9/11, 441 days. And then when you finally get Bush and Cheney to sit down and answer a couple questions, they'll do it only under oath. And if they can have their, you know, if they can sit next to their accomplice and make sure that they have their story straight. I mean, it just doesn't look good. What are they hiding?
How does it change? What do Americans have to do to cause a change? Because we have a president that's in the White House right now that campaigned on change and promised change.
I think what we have to do is we have to not sit back and assume that because Barack Obama got elected that things are necessarily going to change. I mean, we have to remember that there's a certain responsibility that comes with living in a democracy, or in a country that aspires to the democratic ideal, government by, of, and for the people, that insinuates that you must participate in your government, that you have to demand accountability, that you have to ask questions, that you have to participate in the governmental process. Now, I say that, but here we are talking about the NYC Can petition, where you have 80,000 people who are trying to do just that, and the state of New York seems to be blocking their attempts to participate in the process of governing themselves.
In 2009, the 9/11 Truth Movement was working on an effort to get a new investigation into 9/11 by petitioning the New York City Council. It was called NYC Can, or New York Coalition for Accountability Now. The effort ultimately failed, but was one of many efforts by the 9/11 Truth Movement to have accountability and the truth of what happened on 9/11. Today, we have a more sophisticated effort to get that investigation through a grand jury petition filed in April of 2018 to the court in New York City by the group called the Lawyers Committee for 9/11 Inquiry. The court had 90 days to respond to this petition, but to date, they have not. The Lawyers Committee is working on the next phase of this grand jury petition, and if you want to support them, you can do that by signing their petition, and you can do this by going to their website, which is www.lawyerscommitteefor9-11inquiry.org. So that's, again, lawyerscommitteefor9-11inquiry.org. And the 9 and 11 are the numbers, the digits, not spelled out. You can even see the full grand jury petition with all of the evidence they cite. The show you just heard was recorded in the summer of 2018. And now, in August of 2019, the grand jury investigation is supposed to be underway, as indicated by the court in New York in November of 2018. But the grand juries are held in secret, so we don't really know where they're at in the process. And the Lawyers Committee for 9/11 Inquiry also filed a suit in Washington, D.C., against the FBI and the Department of Justice for withholding evidence in the 2015 9/11 review that was requested by Congress. This case is open to the public, and you can also learn about it at the Lawyers Committee website. So things are really happening in the 9/11 Truth Movement this year. I think it's our most exciting year yet. After so many years of researching and gathering evidence, the Truth Movement has now moved into taking action more than ever. So in addition to what you just heard that the Lawyers Committee are doing, we also have the following events going on this 18th anniversary coming up on September 11th, 2019. And I'm going to read you the list of all the events coming up, and you'll see that there are some really exciting things going on. So, civil engineering professor Leroy Hulsey of the University of Alaska at Fairbanks has spent the last several years examining the collapse of World Trade Center Building 7, the third building to come down on 9/11, and his final report is complete. And guess what? It doesn't agree with the official story of what happened there. Anyway, he's going to be presenting his research there on September 3rd, 2019, at 4 p.m. Alaska time at the Scheibel Auditorium at the University of Alaska, Fairbanks. And then he's going to do the same presentation on September 5th, 5 p.m. Pacific time at the Faculty Club at UC Berkeley. So that's pretty exciting. He's going to be speaking in incredible places at a university. He's a professor with a Ph.D., stating that the official story is wrong. Then on September 7th in New York City, it's going to be at the Community Church at 40 East 43rd Street from 6 to 10 p.m. This is on September 7th. And this is going to be featuring Architects and Engineers for 9/11 Truth founder Richard Gage, family member Bob McElvain, and a few other people will be speaking there, most notably Franklin Square Fire Commissioner Christopher Goya. The Franklin Square Fire Commissioners came out earlier this year. They wrote a letter and are endorsing a new investigation into the events of 9/11. That's also pretty remarkable this year. So 2019 has been a good year for 9/11 Truth. And it will also include NSA whistleblower William Binney and media critic Mark Crispin Miller and more. You can learn more about that by going to Architects and Engineers for 9/11 Truth. And then on September 11th in Zurich, Switzerland, there will be an event there, and you can find out more about that by going to 11september.eu/911perspectives. And on September 11th in Washington, D.C., at the National Press Club, there's going to be a live streaming with Architects and Engineers for 9/11 Truth. And then on September 11th from 1 to 5 p.m., they're going to be delivering educational materials and the Bobby McIlvain Act to every member of Congress. And again, they're looking for help. So if you want to go help them do that, that would be great. And then in Oakland, California on 9/11, Mick Harrison, who is a lawyer for the Lawyers Committee for 9/11 Inquiry, will be speaking in Oakland, California at the 9/11 Film Festival there in the Grand Lake Theater. And I mentioned to you already the 9/11 event in Zurich, Switzerland. And then on September 15th in The Hague, Netherlands, there's also going to be the Europe 9/11 Truth event. That's all I have right now, and I'll be sharing with you more as we approach the anniversary in the next few weeks. And I'm going to end the show today with a song by local artists Carl Seeger Henry and Gary Fox Jr. And it's called Building 7, The Smoking Gun. And here it is.
Building 7, The Smoking Gun. It tells the truth about what was done to me and you and to the world. It tells the truth, it tells the truth. 9/11, Building 7. Oh, 9/11, Building 7. At the World Trade Center, three buildings came down, hit by two planes, panic all around. But Building 7 had barely a scratch, not hit by plane, yet it still collapsed. And office fires were blamed for that. Building 7, the smoking gun. It tells the truth about what was done to me and you and to the world. It tells the truth, it tells the truth. 9/11, Building 7. Oh, 9/11, Building 7. The first responders saw molten steel. They heard explosions, swore they were real. And we all watched a scene surreal. Those buildings fell with roaring blast. A demolition controlled and fast. Building 7, the smoking gun. It tells the truth about what was done to me and you and to the world. It tells the truth, it tells the truth. 9/11, Building 7. Oh, 9/11, Building 7. We want the truth. What's the real cause? So many questions, it gives one pause. The official story, so full of flaws. Our leaders command us to just move on. We're here to tell you, we won't move on. We're here to tell you, we won't move on. We're here to tell you, we won't move on. Building 7's the smoking gun. We see the truth about what was done to me and you and to the world. It tells the truth, it tells the truth. 9/11, Building 7. Oh, 9/11, Building 7. Oh, 9/11, Building 7. 9/11, Building 7.